paradise doesn't require a jumper. In holiday heaven, you don't need a scarf. There's a good chance that when you picture your ideal travel destination, when you call on all those cliches and summon a vision of your very own slice of vacation nirvana, it looks pretty warm, right? It's got palm trees and white sandy beaches. It's got large blokes playing ukuleles. It's got infinity pools and cocktails with umbrellas. These are the things we're expected to desire. Everyone wants a holiday in tropical paradise. And yet, that's not where good holidays begin and end. For some of us, say those of us with pale complexions or those who no longer glory in the feeling of sand between their buttocks, the perfect travel destination doesn't have to be hot. In fact, some of the best, some of the most beautiful, and some of the most inspiring are pretty damn cold. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're donning our jackets and we're going somewhere chilly. We're talking about the world's best cold climate destinations, the places where the weather might be cool, but the welcome is warm. What to do there, where to go, what to see, and how to enjoy life without a sarong and a floppy hat. Joining me to do this are two cold climate aficionados who've seen more snow than Santa Claus. First up, she's our favourite Flight of Fancy guest, and someone who's not just visited cold places, but lived in them as well, Uta Juncker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Thanks for joining us. Also with us is a travel writer and adventurer who loves the cold so much he's been to the world's chilliest continent more than 100 times, David McGonigal.
Hi, David. Ben. Hi, Ben.
Great to have you along. Now, guys, I feel this is quite an appropriate topic given the weather in this studio is usually pretty cold.
I usually have 15 layers on in
this
studio.
Yeah. It's, David, prepare yourself. It's going to be freezing.
And when people say, what's the coldest place in the world, I normally say Mittagong.
Mittagong.
Because if you've ever ridden a motorcycle through there in winter, you know that there's nowhere in Antarctica that compares.
Well, strap yourself in because in the next 15 minutes or so, this studio is going to go down to sub-zero. Guys, do you think, is sunshine overrated? Are cold destinations good? Can you have fun in these places?
I will never admit that sunshine is overrated. I am a hot weather girl. I'm like, pass me my sarong and send me out to play. But I had an awakening about the joy and the beauty of cold climate destinations. And it was Antarctica that first lured me over to the cold side. And since then, I've actually really developed a love of visiting places in the depths of winter, like places with proper winter, proper winter rocks.
Right, not just Mittagong, like...
No, not even Tasmania.
Right. David, Alaska must be one of the most scenically spectacular cold climate destinations, surely.
It is, because you've got the whole range of things from kind of down around Anchorage where there are actually trees and then you go up to Denali and all the joys of the wildlife around there. And then as you head towards the northern slopes, I think they're called on the Dalton Highway, just everything diminishes and it's just you in the mud with the trucks and there's kind of an endless procession of trucks going up and servicing the oil fields up there. So it's kind of a range of everything, but you really have to get on a ship to get to see all the exciting things that are up there, like looking for polar bears or walrus, ideally. So all a lot of the wildlife lies offshore.
Right, okay. Yeah. I've got some Canadian friends who've always said to me there's no such thing as the wrong weather, just the wrong clothes. Do you think that's reasonable? You just need to be prepared for these places?
I found that out one day when I left Death Valley in the morning, which is about the hottest place on Earth, and rode to the top of Yosemite.
Okay.
And I was on a motorcycle, and it got colder and colder, and it was about 40 degrees when I'd left, and it was snowing when I got to the top of the pass, and I hadn't actually stopped to put on a jumper or anything, and I don't remember being as cold as that, and I just stopped and I took everything out of my panniers and put it on.
I had the opposite experience of driving down into Death Valley and just watching that temperature gauge go up and up and up and thinking, yeah, how much further can it go up? And it just keeps on going.
And that's an advantage of being of cold climate as you get warm.
Yeah.
And you get that joy of being warm, where it's not quite the same thing when you're somewhere hot and you turn the air conditioner on. It's just not it doesn't replace a fire.
Yeah. What do you think, Uta? Do you need to just be prepared with the right clothes?
Because
if you're cold, you're miserable.
Yeah, and this is the thing about cold weather. It's not something you can dabble in because you're going to need a wardrobe.
Yeah.
And the more wardrobe you have, the better you will be. I mean, it's what your Canadian friends say. The Norwegians have a very similar saying too. And it's, you know, I started off with some thermals and a fleece and a waterproof jacket. And, you know, I've since then I bought boots and various kinds of headgear and stuff. And on my last trip into the snow, which was Yellowstone in winter, they said, you cannot come without snow pants. And me 20 years ago would have gone, I don't need snow pants. They're expensive. Old me.
Yeah, smart
bought
you.
The snow, bought the snow pants and had a whale of a time because I was warm and I was dry. And that's the other thing. Snow melts, gets wet.
I have found as my life has progressed and I've gradually, you know, amassed more of a winter wardrobe, it's just become more and more comfortable to go to these places because it really is just about being comfortable. And for that, you need the right clothes. And sometimes they're expensive and sometimes they'll sit in your wardrobe for years and you won't use them again. And they feel fairly pointless, but you have to have them.
I have this pair of fabulous sort of snow hiking boots. And every time I pull them out, someone will go, oh my God, where did you get those? Because they got discontinued about 10 years ago and mine still look new because I wear them once every 5 years. And, you know, everyone wants them as go, I need your boots. And it's like, they're mine.
David, you must have a shed full of this stuff, wouldn't you?
I do. I give a lot of it away. My wife actually said she didn't know what polar fleece was before she met me. But you think this might be just an Australian problem. You know, it never gets that cold in Australia. We like to think that anyway. But a Canadian friend of mine was posted by his bank to Yellowknife. And that's up in the very far Arctic of Canada.
Yeah, right.
And he took all his ski gear because he knew what cold weather was like. He's Canadian. And he said his first day he just went to the shop and bought everything because his idea of what cold was didn't even compare with what the temperature was like in Yellowknife in November.
Yeah, right, because there is cold and there's cold.
Yes.
And my partner Jess used to live in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, and it is regularly below minus 30 degrees there during winter. And you just can't arrange to meet someone at a certain spot and not turn up because they will get frostbite if you're not there.
Should we talk about our coldest?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see what we got.
Mine is...
I feel like we're going to have a winner here.
Yeah, minus 35 in St. Petersburg in January. And that was so cold. And it was... you couldn't do anything. If you had to take your gloves off, you had to have them back on within 15 seconds. And then it would still take about 10 minutes for your fingers to defrost.
Yeah, right.
It was just beyond cold because somehow... St. Petersburg manages to do both really cold and really moist cold.
Right, okay.
Which is just a disaster in terms of kind of sucking the heat out of your body.
Yeah, right. All right, Uta, your coldest?
Oh, look, I think my coldest is sort of low minus 20s.
Okay.
But so I spent part of my childhood in Germany, and the thing about, it's what you were saying, David, it's not just the temperature, it's the conditions. So if you've got no wind chill and you've got a dry cold, I can remember when I was about, six, you know, there was a cold snap and my mother and I, being equally restless, decided to go for a walk. And so we buttoned up and headed out. And every house we passed, there were people waving at us and we're sort of waving back. And finally someone actually...
Then you remembered you were in Germany and that's just not a thing that people do.
No, but we thought everyone had gotten friendly. And someone inched their window up and was going, go inside, it's minus 17. And it was like, well, it was minus 7 yesterday and it's not much colder. Because we didn't have any of those additional factors.
Yeah, right. I lived in Colorado for a while working at a ski resort there. And it gets seriously cold in Colorado. And you just sort of... You start to get used to it after a while. I remember there was one morning when I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning because I was working on a breakfast buffet as a cook. So I had to be up pretty early to catch a bus. And I walked outside, you know, waded through the snow. And I was thinking, gee, it's cool this morning. I feel there's a definite chill in the air. And I looked at the thermometer on the, you know, the banks all have thermometers there. And it was minus 33 degrees. And it didn't feel that cold. You know, it felt chilly, but it didn't feel, you know, incredibly, insanely cold.
It's amazing how you acclimatise. I've still got a photo of myself from my first trip to Antarctica, and it's me just in a thermal on the deck of the ship in the snow, and I have this ridiculously happy grin on my face because it's the first time in days that I've only worn a single layer. And, like, it was 3 degrees, but it felt like it was the tropics.
Yeah, I remember in Canada one time skiing at Whistler, and that was kind of low minus 20s. And they was giving us hot coffee and hot chocolate at the bottom of the chairlift just so we wouldn't get frostbite on the way up. Mm. And you had to actually check each other for frostbite, particularly if the lifts broke down and you were stuck. You just had to keep looking to see if the tip of anyone's nose was going white.
Yeah.
And whether it was actually, well, that was the excuse we used anyway.
Now, there's another thing that you can get in cold climates, which is the Danish word hygge, which is, you know, has sort of been embraced worldwide, but you can really only get in a cold climate, which is this idea of coziness and, you know, rugging up in front of a fire. And
it's the stop bashing your head against a brick wall and feel so good. It's like, come out of that snow into the nice, warm, cozy interior and have some hot chocolate.
I love that.
And peel
That's
off
great,
the layers.
It?
Oh, it's fantastic. And eat potatoes.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You can in eat any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. Is that, do you get that as well, Dan?
Absolutely, though. On one of our ships, we actually have a fake fire because ships and fire don't go well together.
Yeah, yeah, I can
but a fake
that.
Fire works really, really well because it makes it feel like people are sitting in front of an open fire.
Yeah, and you get to wear silly jumpers as well, which I like.
Yeah, the more ridiculous, the better.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
And if you snowboard, you can wear ridiculous clothes 24 hours of the day.
Good point, good point. But there are sort of these things that, you know, I really love cold climate cultures, I guess because being Australian, they're just so different to the things that we do. I was in Switzerland recently and we had an evening where we took a train up to this little place called Alpenglen, which is a tiny little village in the Bernese Oberland. And basically there's just one guest house there and they serve fondue and you sit around and you eat fondue until you're absolutely stuffed, drink a few beers, and then everyone goes outside with a toboggan and there's this sort of nighttime toboggan course which is lit with floodlights, and you slide down this toboggan course, which takes about 10 to 15 minutes or so. There's another pub down the bottom. You've just got time, if you go really fast, to slug a beer before you jump on the train, and it takes you back up to Alpenglen, and you do the whole thing over again. And it's this sort of really cherished part of Swiss culture, which you never get in a warm place.
Of course, it comes to having the right equipment. So I was just in the Dolomites in Italy, and it was peak summer. We did these amazing hikes, and it's stunningly beautiful. And of course, all the people there who were just rangy and fit were going, oh, you need to come back and do this in winter. And I'm like going, yeah, this would be stunning in winter. This would be great. And you go to the little mountain huts and you eat, you know, bratwurst with potatoes because they're half German up there anyway. But then I was just thinking, oh, you'd want the clothes for it.
Most definitely. Take an adventure to the end of the world with Intrepid Travel and appreciate our planet at its most wild and spectacular. Journey with nomadic reindeer herders in Siberia, snowshoe hike in the mountains above Banff in Canada, or camp amongst the glaciers in Patagonia. Intrepid has a cold climate trip to warm the heart of any traveller. Start exploring today at intrepidtravel.com.
One of my most spectacular winter experiences was just after Christmas, going to Finnish Lapland, and not just visiting Santa Claus, who is remarkable because he speaks about 15 different languages and
right.
is very
he's
polite
like
in all of them.
Good.
He's great. Probably more than that, but I only checked him in 15. And then we also went and got our reindeer driving licenses. So
oh, yeah.
you go out in sleighs, like sleigh bells ringing as you kind of drive around in the snow. And then probably more to my rev head heart was to jump in snowmobiles and go roaring
right.
around on the frozen rivers and then stop and drill holes in the ice and go fishing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is really to, when you're in a cold climate destination, to embrace the cold and go out and do all these things that you can't do back home. You know, go
yes.
snowmobiling, go ice fishing, go ice climbing if you want to. I've been ice climbing in the Johnston Canyon in Alberta in Canada. And it's an incredible thing to do. You know, I felt like Sylvester Stallone in Cliffhanger. It felt like a thing I shouldn't be allowed to do, essentially, because it was too difficult. But it's top rope, so it's the same as when you say if you go abseiling, you're connected to a rope from above you, and so you do the same thing there, which is always taught you're not going to be able to fall, and so you get these crampons, you get your ice axes, and you make your way up a frozen waterfall, and man, that's amazing that you can do that.
Yeah, I did it with a bunch of friends, and it was more kind of Spider-Man, like jumping across crevasses and then just digging in on the other side with two ice axes and your crampons and then climbing
yeah, right.
up. And it was just this sense of, it's amazing. It's not like rock climbing, which is so technical. It's just kind of a matter of the right gear and a lot of grunt to kind of
yeah.
climb out of crevasses and things.
Yeah.
But
okay, so you guys may have missed this in all your jumping and leaping, but part of what I think is the joy of getting out into a winter landscape is actually the landscape itself. And everyone sort of goes, okay, snow is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
So snow's cool. I love ice, and whether it's, you know, filigreed along the trees and you've got all the light pouring in through all the little crystalline shapes, or whether you're down in Antarctica and you've got these massive icebergs and the sound of them and the way they move in the water. And I think those elements of the cold weather are really fun.
That's absolutely right.
If you stop rather than jumping across.
And I think something that we discussed off air actually is snowshoeing as an activity, because for me, I've always enjoyed winter climates by going snowboarding or skiing, and that's pretty much, you know, everything's going at 100 miles an hour. But when you're snowshoeing, you're forced to slow down and take everything in, and there's no sound anymore, and you can just sort of be there in the wilderness. It's a beautiful thing.
I love snowshoeing, which is partly because I'm too uncoordinated to go rock climbing or skiing or any of those things. But snowshoeing is slower, and I can do it. And you're moving through a landscape with a different rhythm than you normally would.
Yeah.
With very little noise, because the snow's damping your footfall, and just everything is just happening around you, and you get to soak it all in. And sometimes there's even a teeny tiny little bird shivering and chipping away and probably dead by nightfall.
Or squirrels running around.
Yeah. Or, you know, last time I did snowshoeing in Yellowstone, they went, so apparently there's a bear out of hibernation somewhere nearby, but don't worry about him.
And in Antarctica, I'd say that we have quite a few Australians come down with us, mm-hmm. and we normally have someone on the ship who has never seen snow until they get to Antarctica.
Yeah, right.
Which
wow,
is,
that's
and
a
then
place
we do carry, and we do carry snowshoes. So you send people out on snowshoes, and people say, you know, what's the difference between the different parts of the season? I always say about the early parts, like November and into even the start of December, Antarctica is so pristine; it's still covered in snow. It's not so good for the penguins because they're waiting for the snow to melt so they can lay their eggs. But it's just that. That, as Uta says, that sense of kind of clean snow. But probably my highlight in terms of wildlife experiences has got to be Couverville Island, which is a gentoo penguin colony, the largest on the Antarctic Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And we were there, and it was really heavy, wet snow. And there was a whole bunch of penguin chicks. It was kind of late January. And the penguin chicks were running around with their tongues out trying to catch snowflakes on their tongues.
That is beyond cute. That is amazing. That's an extremely cute animal anyway, let alone without running around. Yeah. I've seen them molting all their feathers, and they just sort of sit there and they look so glum as all these little bits of things fall off them, and they're amazing
it's
animals.
It's kind of like teenage acne, but...
it's a bit like that.
A million times worse.
They look just as happy without it, too.
I think it was that colony where on my first trip that I was striding along with this penguin expert guy, and I sort of saw something in the snow, and I was sort of looking at him going, did you see that? And he's going, what? I'm going... there's something trapped in the snow. And what had happened was a sort of tunnel had formed within the snow, and a penguin had gotten in somehow and was now trapped in this tunnel and couldn't get out. And I'd just seen him poking his little beak through. And I was like, we have to stage a penguin rescue, you know. And so we staged this penguin rescue where I was, you know, it was just like playing cricket. I was sent way out to the outfield where I couldn't get into trouble. It's like, if he gets out that way, you're in charge. Meanwhile, over here, the expert was doing his thing, and he got... And I had to take my sunglasses off to sort of look up the tunnel and, you know, report back on the condition of the penguin. And then this guy got him out and we rescued him, and he was all well and good and waddled off. And I was so excited. I was jumping up and down with excitement. And of course, I jumped up and down on my sunglasses and broke them, which was not successful. And then later I had great qualms when we sailed away that evening. I was like, you know what? That was actually Darwinism in action.
That's true.
And
you stepped in.
And we stepped in, and we have polluted the gene pool. And he just
some sort of butterfly effect there.
He looked at me and went, we're not going back and putting it back.
Apparently that happened at Macquarie Island, that a penguin chick was being chased by a skua, which predate on penguin chicks. Mm-hmm. And the penguin chick came running up to the door of one of the huts at Macquarie Island. And the person inside the hut opened the door, and the penguin chick ran in to get away from the skua.
Oh, don't tell me they threw it back.
No, and then the skua disappeared, and then they opened the door, and the penguin chick... left, and then they spent the rest of the time arguing about whether they should have done it.
That's a good idea. Interesting.
Well, but the penguin may have been able to get away if the building hadn't been there in the first place.
True.
Was the argument they used for about the first month. Yeah.
Well, I've got to say, I've been on a couple of cruises where the penguins that are being chased by the orcas jump into the zodiacs, and I've never seen anyone actually suggest tossing the penguin back out.
Yeah. We've had that with a seal, and we actually accelerated, and the seal was trying frantically to get into the zodiac. And it was actually up on the pontoon, and we accelerated away, and it went back in the water.
You mean it, because he was smart. He should have been allowed to live.
Well, he did. He actually escaped. He was smart enough. He actually jumped up in some ice.
Okay.
And
okay. That's good.
Orcas thought it was all too difficult.
Yeah, that's fine. The people are different in cold climate destinations. Like, you know, Scandinavians different to people who live on the Mediterranean. Are there different cultures in these places?
They're a lot more organized.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
It's when you've got a long, hard winter coming, you got to be prepped for it.
Yeah.
You got to, and then they relax in the knowledge that their work is done. Right.
Are they more reserved, do you think, cold climate people?
Depends how much they've drunk.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Because a lot of drinking goes on in winter generally.
Yeah, yeah. And then I picture Scandinavians and they're maybe not as open as people from Italy or Spain or something like that.
You haven't met many Finns, have you?
No, that's what I was thinking. There are lots of people who put the lie to that, including Finns, who are completely bonkers. And Canadians as well are very open and very gregarious.
And I had an Icelander tell me once that they had to export Bjork because she was too normal and didn't fit in.
Speaking of Icelanders and Finns, one of the things I think they have in common is they're just incredibly no-nonsense. They just get stuff done. You know, there's not a whole lot of worry about stuff. It's like, oh, your house fell over. Okay, let's build a new one. And it gets done, you know. And they have that at one extreme, and at the other extreme, there's a lot of drinking.
And if you can go to sweeping generalizations, I find that people in tropical climates tend to be immediately friendly, mm-hmm. the kind of the whole, hey man, come in, have a beer.
Yeah.
Whereas I find the further you go north, and I found this particularly with Scotland and places like that, people are really reserved. But once you become a friend with them, you're a friend forever. And you can come back and see them 10 years later. And the guys that offer you the beer won't remember you who was there last week.
Yep.
Whereas the Scots will say, oh, you're coming back over. And the same for Canada. I go back
there. Yeah, that's very true.
Every now and again, and they just welcome you into their house as if you are a lifetime friend, because you
once
are.
Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, I found the same in both those places. Let's talk about a few other great cold climate destinations. I think, Udo, you mentioned Yellowstone National Park as being a good spot in winter.
Yellowstone in winter. Yeah. Which the main reason I did was I'm sort of phobic about crowds, and I always wanted to go to Yellowstone, but I just heard, you know, it's basically a car park in summer. And then someone said, oh, you can go on a tour in winter. And I thought, I have the outfit. I can go on the tour in winter. And they were the ones who told me I needed snow pants. So I still had to buy equipment. But mm-hmm. it is stunningly beautiful. So everything is frosted. And again, of course, they've got all these geothermal hotspots, which are all billowing fantastically. And of course, the wolves are out, which you never see in summer. I mean,
you can see the wolves then?
Yeah, the wolves. Yeah. There's you call up in the morning, there's people who just go to Yellowstone in winter to look at wolves.
Right.
And you know, you just get one of their numbers and go, where are you this morning? And mm-hmm. they're there watching the wolves and they're playing and coyotes and foxes. Foxes with these amazing thick winter coats, bright red on this pure white background, and hunting the little mice beneath the snow and then licking on them. Yeah. Sorry.
Poor mice.
Poor mice, but you know, someone's got to die.
This is true. Yeah. It's a circle of life.
And just utterly beautiful and no one around.
Yeah, right.
Stunning. And frozen waterfalls and, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. What about you, David? You were saying St. Petersburg is one of your choices.
Yeah, because St. Petersburg in summer, it's really nice and it's kind of white nights and party town.
Yeah.
But in winter, it is just beautiful because it's almost like it was designed that way, so that when you've got icicles kind of coming down off all the buildings and it looks spectacular. But the one place we haven't mentioned is Nepal. And
right.
Nepal, you have to go to in winter, because if you're there in summer, it's too hazy and you can't even see the Himalayas.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Whereas like from December on, the Himalayas are just gleaming out at you and just enticing you to go walking.
Right. So that's the time to go over there and go trekking then?
Yeah, it's really odd. If you go to Bhutan, you go in summer.
Yeah.
Because you can't get anywhere really in winter. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nepal, you have to go there in winter between, say, November and April.
Yeah, right.
Because that's the time when it's just so clear.
Yeah.
When you are actually looking up at the Himalayas and there is nothing on Earth, even after all those times in Antarctica, there's nothing like your first view of the Himalayas or Everest particularly.
Yeah, amazing. And for me, I think Canada is such a great cold climate destination. I know, you know, it's very popular for Australians to go skiing and snowboarding in Whistler, but there's so much more to it. You know, you've got all of those activities we've talked about, like dog sledding and snowshoeing and ice climbing. But then you can go to a place like Montreal or Quebec City, which
Montreal,
are these beautiful
like
cold climate places.
And, you know, this is, again, that thing of that extreme climate. You need a lift. So in Montreal, in every February, they have this festival. And it's all about getting out and doing silly things in the snow. And I was kind of like, well, I'm here for a story. I will walk the streets and then I will go inside. And I ended up waltzing in some square in Montreal at 1 a.m. while the snow came down. You know, it was beautiful. You know, like a big parka and big scarves and gloves and stuff. But it was beautiful. I was
just
not
the right clothes.
It
all
was
good.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And is this the time to say that this time next week I'll be in Iqaluit in Canada just about to head out and try and find some polar bears hunting seals on the ice.
I mean, I suppose it's a good time if you want to make us really jealous.
Yeah, well, that was the purpose of it. Yeah. And then heading over to Greenland. And in Greenland, again, on Uta's story about how people socialize in winter, everyone in Greenland's houses are painted really bright primary colors. And mm-hmm. I asked the local one that question, why do you paint your houses such bright colors? And he said, so we can find them on Saturday night.
Yeah, you've got the red house, you've got the blue house. Yeah, yeah, that would work. Another thing we haven't really had much of a chance to cover, unfortunately, that I love about winter is winter-specific foods, cold climate-specific foods.
Potatoes.
Potato roasty. Yeah, amazing. And, you know, fondue. So great. You've got, in Japan, they eat nabe. They have all these amazing different versions of nabe, which is a sort of Japanese hot pot, which is beautiful.
Glühwein.
In Belgium, moules frites, the mussels and fries. That's the time to have it.
Hearty, stodgy food.
Yeah, and you're covered in these great layers of clothing, and so who cares what you eat? You can just have it all.
And you know you've shivered it off during the day. You need to refuel.
You do. Now, guys, just to finish up, we're going to get your last tips on travel to cold climate destinations. What's the one thing you would tell people to bear in mind when they're planning a trip like this?
Buy the clothes.
Oh,
sorry.
Uta, please.
Buy the clothes. People buy them.
Yeah, okay. David,
yeah,
how about you?
And I go the same way. And the tip in Antarctica is everyone thinks, oh, you've got to have to take really warm clothes. Mm-hmm. But the clothes are no good if they get wet. So you've got to take waterproof layers. You have to think, if you stay dry inside your clothes, then you can get away with a lot less. If your clothes get wet, particularly gloves, like taking gloves that aren't waterproof, is just a disaster, because when the snow does melt into them, then they're just as cold as if you don't have gloves on at all.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I would reiterate something that I mentioned before, which is embrace winter for everything it has to offer. You know, don't just hunker down by a fire and shelter yourself from it. Get out there and do all those activities that you can't do back home.
You know what neither you nor I have mentioned, and I know we both love?
What's that?
Baths,
that's true.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, saunas. People go to bathhouses, whether you're in Japan or Russia or Finland.
Yeah.
Get naked, let people beat you with birch twigs.
Absolutely.
Sit in hot pools.
Dive into cold lakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, do all those things. That is a very good point. Well, Uta and David, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. Lovely to have you along.
Thanks, man.
If you would like to read any stories from me or Uta or David, you can check them out on traveller.com.au. And you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. We'll see you next time on Flight of Fantasy.